All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Wow, these kids in. Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, Chief Warrant Officer, helicopter pilot in Vietnam 1969 with the 195th Assault Helicopter Company. Joining me in the studio right now is the it's the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Director, and that is Michael Smith. Michael, welcome to Veterans Radio again.
Dale, always good to be in the studio with you.
It is always fun because we're going to be talking about benefits today, folks, and that's why we want you to give us a call here on Veterans Radio today. Joining me on the line in just a moment will be a lawyer from Legal Help for Veterans, and so hopefully we're going to be able to answer your questions. And we're also going to be giving you some news about changes in the law regarding disabilities. Changes in, what was the thing you were just talking about?
It's the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, or affectionately known as RAMP.
Ramp it up, right? So, you know, when we file for a disability and they deny us, which never happens, then the idea is that they're going to speed up the appeal process a little bit. And then we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about some new people that have become eligible for disability benefits, certain people that have served in Guam, which I just learned about yesterday. And then there's a survey here by the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America about what we're looking for in a VA director if we can ever find one that can get approved by enough people in both parties so we can get this thing. You know, it'd be nice if the VA had a boss out there, just so we want to get that fixed. So what you can do is you can give us a call here on Veterans Radio. The number is 734-822-1600. That's the studio number, and you can get you'll be talking to Derek, and he'll put you right through to us, and we'll answer your questions today. 734-822-1600. So I suppose I better check and see who's on the phone here. There we go. Okay. Last week we were not able to connect with an organization that is helping out military families, and that is Matt Amon, who is the president of the Carfax Foundation. And Matt, welcome to Veterans Radio. Glad we finally got a hold of you.
Oh, thanks, Dale. It's great to be here. Great to be here to represent CarMax.
Well, the reason that we wanted to talk to you was about this Kaboom program that you are partnered up with. Could you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Absolutely. So CarMax associates have told us that they're the most passionate about children's healthy living. And so we've partnered up with Kaboom, which is a nationwide organization that's dedicated to bringing play to children all across the country. And we've dedicated $5 million over 3 years to hopefully reach 200,000 kids across the country. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really, really excited about is there's a large portion of that commitment that's centered around supporting military communities. I'm a veteran myself, and it's just exciting to see how much our associates care about supporting military communities. And so in the last month, very beginning of April, we kicked off the Week of Play, which is where we donate play equipment to 11 organizations all across the country that serve military families, and included a huge playground build in DuPont, Washington, which is near Joint Base Lewis-McChord, and it's just been a great month of military support and work with Kaboom.
Well, I think that's terrific that you're doing this. Are these bases? Are these playgrounds going to be on the bases? Or are they in the communities that surround the bases?
Yeah, they're typically in communities that surround the bases. This past playground build was in an area called DuPont, Washington. This is just right outside the base there. It was an elementary school in the area, and it was just a great event. Chloe Clark Elementary School was the name there, and we were able to, in one day, build a great playground for the children there. And the really neat thing about it is that the kids get to design it, and so they meet in advance with a big staff of folks, and they put together their dream sheet, and then the engineers design it. And then in one day, a large group of CarMax associates, plus we had local community members and also service members that joined forces and built this great playground in one day. It was just an incredible event. I happened to be there, and just could not have been more fun.
It sounds great. When kids can design things, I can only imagine what the equipment looks like. Kind of a, probably a little Dr. Seuss-ish as it goes along there. Tell me about the CarMax and the CarMax Foundation, so our audience knows who you folks are.
Yeah, so CarMax is centered. Our home office is in Richmond, Virginia, but we have 190 stores all around the country. In 41 states, as a matter of fact, we're opening 13 to 16 stores over the next 2 years in each year, and we're the nation's largest retailer of used cars. Our model is centered around being honest and transparent, bringing integrity to the business. We have no haggle prices and free appraisals, and one of the things that I'm really proud of is that we've made Fortune 100's best companies to work for 14 years in a row. And a huge portion of what we care about on that side of the house is hiring military. I'm a really good example of that. I served in the Army, and I was, you know, really didn't have any automotive industry background, and was given a chance to join CarMax, and have had a great career so far. I know that we're about 8% former military or military family members, and but back in that this past year, which our fiscal year 2018, 11% of our new hires were military or their spouses. So, really, really excited about that aspect of things, and then you know we've created our CarMax Foundation, which I'm honored to be the president of, and really centered our work around children's healthy living, youth leadership, and education, because that's what our associates have told us that they care the most about. Mm-hmm. And that's what we enjoy doing is reaching out to our associates and then bringing their passions to life. And it's just been a great, really over a decade with the CarMax Foundation, doing some great work out there.
Well, it certainly sounds like it, Matt, and I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, and I'm encouraging our audience to go out. If you need a used car, go out to CarMax. You can find them online. It looks like the closest one to us is over in Kentwood, Michigan. It's closer to Grand Rapids, but that's all right.
Yep.
It's a fun ride. The sun is out finally, and so you can take a road trip and come back with a brand new car and help out a veteran and help out veterans organizations and maybe build a nice little playground near your military base. So how would they get a hold of your foundation?
Yeah, the best way to reach the foundation is actually to go to CarMax.com. And then you can click the link around the CarMax Foundation, and you can see lots of great information there, including more information about our partnership with Kaboom.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Matt. I'm so glad we were able to get a hold of you. What a great operation that you've got going, it sounds like, and I hope to talk to you in the future. Let us know if you ever put any playgrounds up around in Michigan.
Absolutely, we will.
All right. Thank you
Take
very
care.
Much.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for your time.
All right.
So that's CarMax Foundation. They are partnered up with Kaboom to build playgrounds around military bases all over the country. So you go to their website, CarMax.com, and you can research the foundation. Maybe you can get a hold of them, and maybe they can help you out. It sounds like a great idea to me. All right, we're going to take a quick break for a little commercial, and then when we come back, we've got Michael Smith, and we're going to have Christina Darrow here on Veterans Radio to ask your questions. So if you've got any questions about benefits, any questions about the VA, and we'll try to answer them as best we can today. We want your opinions. We want your concerns. And the number, again, is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600, and we will be right back. And we are back on Veterans Radio, and today is our benefits program. The last Sunday of every month is when we talk about benefits. And so, again, we encourage you to give us a call or let us know whatever your concerns are or whatever the problem is that you might be having working with the VA. Joining me on the line right now is our good friend, Christina Darrow, who is a lawyer with Legal Help for Veterans. Christina, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. Hi, Dale. It's good to be back.
It is good to talk to you and to find out what is going on, because it seems like there's a lot of changes and a lot of different laws are being affected, it seems like. So the very first one that you talked to me about last week was the not having to prove where your pain came from. That's my version of it. I know that's not correct, but tell our listeners what that's all about.
Yeah, it's actually a new case that was decided just last month by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. It's called Saunders v. Wilkie, and it actually overturns 19 years of precedent. The court has previously used a case where it was held that pain alone isn't a disability. And so what that means is you may have back pain, but if you didn't have a current diagnosis of, let's say, muscle spasms of your back or degenerative joint disease of your back, the VA would deny the claim because they said that just because you had pain, it doesn't mean anything. You need to have a specific diagnosis. And so what this court did in this new case was the Federal Circuit looked at what could possibly constitute a disability. And they held a little bit differently than what it was, and they said that a disability in the eyes of VA could actually refer to the functional impairment of earning capacity. And what that means is basically you need to have some sort of functional impairment as a result of your pain. So even though it doesn't rise to the level of a specific diagnosis, as long as your pain is causing some sort of functional impairment, that maybe you can't work, in regards to your knee, let's say maybe your knee's swelling up or you're having difficulty in walking, you need to constantly elevate it, that would count in the eyes of VA as a disability in terms of claims. So it's actually a huge change in what they've done. And I'm kind of looking forward to see how that's going to work and impact a lot of our cases that we have right now.
I'm curious to see how that does work out. I mean, because that could open the door to a lot of potential disability claims.
It does, and especially for some of our more recently discharged veterans. They have issues going on in service. They've been blown up. They have orthopedic issues and things like that. And when they come out, they may not have a diagnosis of arthritis right away. Mm-hmm. But yet their back isn't functioning the way it is. They have decreased range of motion. You know, they have to take all sorts of medication for it. Same thing with knees or with shoulders. And we've been seeing a lot of those claims being denied because of the old holding that was in place, which is where pain alone doesn't count as a disability. So I think with this, you're going to see a lot of changes where maybe the veteran doesn't quite have a diagnosis yet, but very clearly something is going wrong and the pain is causing them a lot of problems in how they're functioning.
Michael, any comments on that? Have you had anybody has applied for disability for back pain? I'm sure you have.
Yes. And, well, when you deal with the undiagnosed illnesses that are related to service in Southwest Asia, the problem that you have is most doctors are not going to treat you for symptoms. They're always looking to diagnose something. So the minute there's a diagnosis, it falls outside of the range of an undiagnosed illness for service connection, and I've had a lot of those denied, and one of them is what we're speaking about here is pain in the joints, pain in the muscles, and other locations of the body that are not related to, say, fibromyalgia or some kind of other disability. So this is huge. We're really looking forward to how the Department of Veterans Affairs is going to implement this new court decision. I like following court decisions and how administrative agencies implement them. They typically will start with a fast letter to their employees saying, okay, this is how you need to start doing things until they can actually get the rules updated to be consistent with the court's decision. But yeah, I'm very interested in seeing how this is going to play out for our veterans because, as she mentioned, it does affect this particular group of veterans more than anybody else because they have a lot of these joint pains and pains all over their body, orthopedic related, and yet there's no diagnosis. And so the VAs, they want a diagnosis so they can service connect a actual medical condition.
Right. And you think that's because, unfortunately, these guys are getting blown up and are the mines and things that are blown up, they're their trucks and so forth, and they're kind of getting flung against walls, but nothing's broken. But it's hurting.
Oh, absolutely. I believe it's also the nature of being in Southwest Asia, because as you may know, from the onset of the initial Persian Gulf War up until now, they still don't have any explanations about what's causing the undiagnosed illnesses. Mm-hmm. And this pain in the joints and pain in your muscles is one of them. So it's not only the type of service and the things that they're involved with while they're there, it's something about that area of the world that's causing some of these other conditions in mm-hmm. our military service personnel.
Okay. Christina, have you had any of these? I'm sure you've had some of these claims too, or at least had to defend them.
We have. We definitely have. And exactly what Michael's talking about, it makes it very difficult. You know, like I had said, under the old case law and the way the VA functioned, they estimated that it was about 11,000 claims that got denied. That doesn't even count the claims where the veterans didn't bother to appeal because they had already thought, oh, great, I need to have an actual disability. And, you know, my representative or whomever is telling me there's no basis for an appeal because I don't have, you know, an actual diagnosed disability. So I think it'll definitely impact the way claims are handled. I'm curious to see how long it'll take VA to implement this and if it's going to be a little bit confusing for a lot of their employees, because like I said, this is a big change. But there's also, it's a fine line as well, because the court didn't say that it's all pain. It needs to be pain with some sort of functional impairment. So I'm curious if the VA is going to start splitting hairs on that and trying to quantify what exactly is sufficient functional impairment to then be able to grant these benefits. If I were to guess, that's probably where the next fight is going to end up breaking out over, is what exactly amounts to a functional impairment.
Well, Christina, if you remember, one of the other precedent-setting cases was DeLuca versus Brown, where the court had to remind the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that when giving range of motion tests, they had to consider pain, and it was already in the regulation. It was just something that the VA failed to do when they were examining veterans. And now I see those in compensation and pension exam reviews even more than I did, say, for instance, within 5 or 6 years of that court decision, where they're actually quoting from DeLuca versus Brown in the actual compensation and pension exam, saying, hey, examining official, by the way, we have to think about pain on motion when we're thinking about the limitation of motion and functional loss. So make sure you do that. And I'm happy to see that, and I'm hoping that something similar will be incorporated into the exam request so that they can remind the examining officials just exactly the criteria, at least what we understand from the court's decision, is somehow incorporated into that request.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, another issue that I saw, and by the way, we're talking about benefits here, and we're talking about the VA, and maybe if you have a question about a disability claim that you filed or you want to file and you don't know how to go about filing it, we got two experts here that will be happy to answer your questions. Just give us a call at 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. Another article that I read just this week was about that the VA is allowing claims for Agent Orange exposure on the island of Guam. Do either one of you familiar with that, or did I make that up? No questions?
I have not heard an official release from the U.S. Okay. Department of Veterans Affairs acknowledging that, and I would, you know, I'd be curious about your source so that I could maybe read
about it. Military Times, actually, is where I found it, and it was that there was a guy who had, and you guys are going to have to figure out the word, the ischemic heart problem. Mm-hmm. And he said it was, you know, it's caused by Agent Orange, or it's one of the 7 or so or 16 that are, you know, assumed presumptive. Anyway, and they gave him they approved his disability claim because he had been exposed to it on Guam back in 70 or 60s and 70s and so forth. So I'll try and find that article again before we go off the air today. But I think it's important that, especially the people that are my age now that we're getting a little nervous about things when they can't figure out where they came from, that there are many issues out there that are still associated with exposure to the Agent Orange herbicides that were out there. And then I think it's worth our while, and it's worth all of our listeners' while, that if you ever, you know, that we're exposed to it, go to the VA and get that, at least get the Agent Orange physical.
Well, Dale, you know, the reason I'm asking is because I had a veteran contact me. He was a U.S. Air Force veteran who was stationed on Guam, and he specifically said that they were loading the cargo planes in Guam to take the large cans of Agent Orange or herbicide over to Vietnam to be used. And he has several of the presumptive conditions and claimed that many of his service mates had already received disability compensation for their claims, and so he had filed his claim as well. Mm-hmm. And when I checked on it, and this was about a week ago, I wanted to see had the VA updated their website to include Guam as a place where herbicides mm-hmm. were stored or used outside of Vietnam, and it had not made the list yet. So there is a means by which people can still do it. It would be they file the claim based on direct service connection. Mm-hmm. And this is where they get a physician, much like you and I were talking about a disability, that is even certain disabilities not being recognized as being related to herbicide exposure yet. If a physician looking at other medical journals and studies that have been conducted by either the Institute of Medicine or other entities outside of the United States, specifically mm-hmm. Canada and Australia, Vietnam did several studies, as well as the Brits, the United Kingdom. There are studies out there that can give doctors a good foundation to come to an opinion and excluding all other factors in a person's medical history that could cause a disability. They can give the at least as likely as not opinion mm-hmm. that herbicide exposure might be the likely cause of a person's disability. And on that basis, the VA then adjudicates the claim a little bit differently than a claim that's based on presumption.
Right. Okay. Well, I will find that. Christina, did you have a comment?
No, I didn't. I actually, same thing as Michael. I have not heard that yet. We have a couple clients in the same boat where they've alleged that they were actually handling the barrels of herbicides in Guam, but so far the VA has just been denying the claim. So if this does come out as something to be able to change it into a presumptive condition, that would actually really impact a lot of veterans' claims. That would be very helpful.
Well, I'll try to find it when we break for the news. We do have a quick question on the line. We've got a veteran. His name is Dave. Dave, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're doing well.
Doing well.
Hi.
What's your question?
Listen, I had a situation, okay? I served in between 82 and 85. I was in the EMP Corps. Anyway, we were having a platoon softball game, and I hit the base, and I actually ripped my ACL. Now, at the time, it was about 1985. I was short. I was getting out pretty soon. And I was real close with the doctors because I was on a small post, you know, military police, blah, blah, blah. And that doctor recommended just to put me in a cylinder cast because I had actually had a scope surgery when I was 17. It was worked fine, got me in, no problem. And he said, if you know, they sent me down to Wurzburg and look, see, and maybe fuse my knee. I was better off, you know, if I'm getting out to have a really good arthroscopic doctor look, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I out process. I'm 21 years old. I sign all these papers. I don't even realize I sign, you know, oh, I don't have any problems. Well, I walk around, you know, with a full blown ACL tear for years and had to have a total knee reconstruction at one point and then total knee replacement. And I tried to make a claim. I think I used the PVA. They gave me three different lawyers. None of them prepared me for the actual interview. Everything was recorded. When it was read back to me, I ended up sounding foolish because I had no preparation. And they denied it. And the bottom line is it happened there. It's on record that I was in a cylinder cast for I don't know how many weeks. They had to drop me in a foxhole so I could qualify for the last time, so I made sure I kept my expert. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know if there's recourse. It wasn't handled properly, and I just gave up.
Well,
and the truth of the matter is, it happened there. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. I hit the bag. the knee ripped, it popped. The tear was old when they actually went in and reconstructed it in 94. He said it was temporary until I could have replacement. Mm-hmm. And he could tell the knee had been torn for years. And anyway, I've always wondered, curious if there was a recourse I could take or look into or whatever, because what happened happened.
Right. Well, Dave, I'm going to have to.
It caused me a lot of problems.
Yeah. Dave, I'm going to have to ask you to hold on here because we got to take a break. We got to go to the news. And when we come back, we'll have David and Christina see if they can come up with an answer for you, or at least a path that you can take them. You know, you never know. But,
yeah, okay, thanks. Well, okay. I really appreciate it, guys. I really do. Just even talking about it, I appreciate it.
All right, well, hang on the line, when we get back. How much time have I got? 1 minute. 1 minute. Okay. So you can see, folks, we've got the experts here to answer your questions. So just like Dave, give us a call here at Veterans Radio. The number is 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. We're going to take a quick break for the news, and we're going to have our Medal of Honor segment, and then we're going to come back and answer your questions. And if you don't have any questions, we're going to give you information that will help you think if maybe we can help you out. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and technical difficulty there with our Medal of Honor. Jack Jacobs, I'm sorry, we'll get you next week. I'll clean it up for you, and we'll get that on for you at that time. We were talking with a veteran named Dave who had torn his ACL quite a while ago. Dave, you still online?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, Michael's got a suggestion for you here.
Okay. So, well, should I get a pen?
Sure. You may want to, Dave, because there's several ways that, without knowing the facts of the case and being able to read your rating decisions, going on what you said, there's several things that comes to mind. If this was presented to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs as a claim for direct service connection, meaning the ACL tear was your first injury to your knee, then the VA could have denied it because it should have been filed as aggravation, meaning you injured your knee prior to entering the service, and that this injury was an aggravation of a prior injury. So a claim for aggravation is different than a claim for direct service connection, and the evidence that's required is a little bit different. Now, if there is documentation that you, in fact, tore your ACL while you're on active duty, and your service treatment records bear that out, and you now then have the first element of what anybody needs for a claim. Something happened in service and it's documented. The next thing any person needs for a claim for disability compensation is a diagnosis of a current chronic disability. You have that as well. And here's the thing that most claims are missing. The third component, which is the nexus or the link between those two. That is typically in the form of an opinion from a physician that says, yep, I read these service treatment records where I see he tore his ACL, and they didn't provide any treatment for him, and now it's led to this current chronic disability that now is going to require us to replace his knee. It's my medical opinion that this caused that. With that kind of evidence in hand, you can even reopen your claim, and we call that, if you get an opinion, if that was what was lacking, you can reopen your claim on the basis of what we call new and material evidence. And that opinion from a physician would be considered new and material evidence to reopen your claim.
There you go.
Well, the good news is the guy that actually did my, it's a long story, but the guy that scoped my knee, I just torn some cartilage only, when I was 17. And that gentleman actually invented this arthroscopic surgery. And I had no, they knew it, but I passed everything to get in. Okay, duck walk the whole shot. All right, the doctor that that diagnosed me in the small unit I was at just recommended, since he knew I had a great surgeon, that guy developed the scope. That since I was getting out, he said I wouldn't have our guys. We don't have that kind of an ability to do something, put you in a cylinder cast, if you can make it through, you're going to be out in a few months, blah, blah, blah. Now, it turns out the guy who did my knee reconstruction was actually the same, he worked under the same guy, okay? And I actually have sold him furniture. I know him. I know his family. And so I can get a hold of him, no problem.
Dave, are you here in Washtenaw County?
Well, I'm in Livingston County.
Okay, well, yeah, you could probably go over and see Adam Schmitty. He's the director of the Livingston County Department of Veterans Affairs. What I would recommend is, if I believe Adam, much like I do, has access or remote access to the VA computing systems.
Okay.
If you were my customer, I would have you come into the office. I would assign representation to us. We would submit what's called an intent to file that gives us a year to actually get the medical evidence that we need and keep the same effective date.
Okay.
And then once I had access to your electronic claims folder, I would actually print your service treatment records or the portions of them that shows that injury to your ACL while you're on active duty.
Well, yeah. I mean,
so that you could take.
They didn't open it up and no, they just, they knew I ripped something. So he put me in a cylinder cast is what he did. You know what I mean? He said if I went down and actually had him actually open the knee up, they would have fused it. This was back in 85.
But there's some documentation in your service treatment record that something happened to that knee, correct?
Oh yeah, without question. No,
so
no, no.
What I'm saying
is had a hearing.
What I'm saying is that you could actually with those copies of your treatment records from the service in hand, you could then take them to your surgeon and say, hey, this is what happened to me when I'm in service. Do you think this led to this? And then he can reference, I've reviewed his service treatment records. It's my medical opinion that this caused that. And that piece of evidence would be very, very strong.
All right, Dave, let us know how that goes.
Is there a number for Mr. Schmitty?
Hold on. I think he's going to look it up here in his phone.
Yeah, I've got to get it.
Just happens to have, you know, these things for you. I appreciate you calling in, Dave. And this is what we want to provide for our listeners every, the last Sunday of every month is questions on your disability claims. What can you do?
You guys are great. I love listening to your show.
Thank you very much. That's a paid political announcement. We'll take it. But the idea...
You're doing a great service, guys, regardless. Just to recognize people is it's not done enough. It's done more now than it was, that's for sure.
It definitely is, Dave. And we like to think that we got that started about 15 years ago when we first went on the air with Veterans Radio. And, okay, he's got the number for you.
They're located at 2300 East Grand River Avenue.
Are they in Howell?
In Howell. Yes, they are.
Yeah, I just was there because I was trying to get money.
Okay.
Because I lost my job and all this stuff, and I just started a new one.
And they've got a strong veterans relief fund, just like we do.
I didn't have a certain type of medal when I left, even though I did certain things that were technically classified, but they weren't. It was East Berlin stuff, so it never happened.
I understand. So, I think what they were looking for was the Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal. But they can still help you with your claim for compensation.
And they can't give me that for that because we weren't supposed to do what we did.
Exactly.
Hold on. Let them give you the number and then we'll help you out.
They're at area code 517-546-6338. And yes, they're just like us. They're accredited county veteran service officers and they can help you with your claim for compensation.
I know right where it is. I've actually got to go into Howell anyway. Monday, so I'll contact them.
Okay. Thank you.
I was told also that I might be able to get assistance, just temporary assistance while I get back on my feet. I started my new job, so forth. I was in the hospital for 8 days, possibly through DAV or anything like that. Is that an issue? Is that a possibility?
What's that, Michigan Trust?
So
Michigan Trust will not do it because I do not have the Expeditionary Medal.
Yeah, he's got the same issues with the Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal. You might want to contact the post. If there is a DAV post or a VFW post or an American Legion post, they do have benevolent funds. And yes, you can talk to one of their post service officers about the potential for that.
Okay.
Let us know how it goes, Dave. Thank you.
Really appreciate the help. I really do. Timing's perfect. The Lord works in great ways.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling.
God bless you guys.
All right.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the point. That's why we've got Michael and we've got Christina here today to answer your questions if you have any. Again, that number is 734-822-1600. All right, Christina, I'm assuming that you would offer the same type of advice?
Yes, of course. It's honestly sounds like it's coming down to a medical opinion, and probably if I were to guess why he was denied, it's similar to what Michael said, where unfortunately if he didn't get actual treatment for it between 1985 when he did it and until 1994, that's probably the easiest thing that VA denied, was just that there was too much of a delay and that they weren't sure that the current problems were actually related to what happened to him during service. So.
Okay. My question, which I think was something that, Dave brought up, was this lack of a expeditionary medal that you were talking about, if he was involved in some sort of covert operations?
So the Michigan Veterans Trust Fund, which is established under Public Act 9 of 1946, as well as the Veterans Relief Fund Act of 1899, Public Act 214, both of those financial relief programs that are specific to Michigan. Now, this is not the federal government. This is our Michigan laws. They both require that the person have served on active duty during a recognized period of war, or if they were serving during recognized periods of peacetime and they were issued the Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal, they would also have eligibility for financial relief.
Excuse me, I'm wetting my whistle, as they say here. All right, but they have all these rules that are going on out there, when you figure that if you don't have a particular medal to acknowledge your service, and if he was on some sort of super secret group, I guess there's nothing that he can do.
If there was no Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal issued for his participation in a particular operation, then no, there's nothing that the military can do to rectify that either. What counties can do, and this is, I'll plug Washtenaw County.
You guys might have a little extra.
Because of our operational millage and the way we wrote the ballot language on our millage back in the general election in November of 2016, we both acknowledged that the money would be used to do our legal and financial obligations to our wartime veterans as specified in Public Act 214 of 1899. Mm-hmm. But we also said that we could use it for the financial relief of all veterans that live here in Washtenaw County. So we set aside $100,000 of that money to specifically be used for the financial relief of peacetime veterans, regardless if they have the Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal.
Oh, that's awesome.
We take care of all of our veterans here in Washtenaw County, but that's because we have got one of the most generous taxpayers who said, yes, we want to take care of our veterans. And our office has been here since 1950. We've always had great support from the public as well as our leadership in Washtenaw County government, both the boards of commissioners in the past as well as all the county administrators in the past. So we're very fortunate here. I know Adam has an operational millage up there. I'll be seeing him next week in Traverse City at our conference.
Hear from Dave.
And I'm going to tell him that maybe they should consider setting some of that money aside for their peacetime vets.
You know, one of the things about being a veteran in Michigan, and there are so many, there are many advantages. Let's put it that way. I found out that, you know, Veterans Radio, we are an LLC. I don't have to pay a registration fee every year because I'm a disabled veteran. All I had to do was send them my letter. And they said, okay, no, it's only $25. But I thought, wow, I'll take it. You know, so check it out. You know, for any of you veterans out there that may be experiencing difficulties like Dave, there are organizations that want to help you. And it just may take a little while for you to find the right one. And maybe there are so many people with the passion of you, Michael, and Christina that want to help veterans. And there are new organizations out there that are trying to get together to serve as veterans advocates that can help out as well, at least point you in the right direction, because many times many veterans just don't know where to go, where to start. We've got another caller on the line. Steve, welcome to Veterans Radio. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Waterford Township.
Okay, Steve, welcome to Veterans Radio. What's your question?
I have surgery on my foot, so I have service-connected disability on my feet. I had additional surgery in 2015, and basically, to make it short, the surgery really, to me, wasn't 100% successful. I think sometimes it might even be more worse than it was. I applied for additional compensation, disability compensation, probably about a year, year and a half ago, and it took about 9 months, and the decision again was declined. And I really feel that I've sort of been deprived of what I believe I deserve. My capabilities are limited. I do have a handicap tag now for my vehicles, but they'll probably want to say, or they'll probably tell me they should redo the surgery or whatever. I really don't want to because of my age, for one thing, and because of the complexity of the surgery, I don't really want to go through that again. It was very painful, and I was in a boot for several weeks, and then crutches, and also a wooden shoe. So I'm not sure really what to do, the next step to do, to try to see if they would, reassess my compensation request.
Let me give this one to Christina. Could you like to answer Steve's question or try to?
Yeah, of course. There's a couple things, and without actually seeing your medical records and knowing what precisely your service connected for and knowing precisely what the surgery was, in order to get a higher rating, you need to make sure that your symptoms meet the criteria, the next higher criteria for your condition. And that's something that should have been laid out in the rating decision, what the criteria was. Oftentimes, VA does overlook certain symptoms and things like that. So it's definitely worth appealing and having your representative point out all of your symptoms, even if it's not exactly on point to what the rating criteria is. You can also make an argument for what's called an extra scheduler rating. And what that means is basically you don't meet the criteria for the next higher rating, but you have all of these symptoms that are really impacting your life, and VA should compensate you for them. The other thing is, too, dependent upon what actually happened in regards to the surgery and what you're actually service-connected for your feet for, there might be a claim under 38 U.S.C. Section 1151. And what that is it's basically a claim for negligence or medical malpractice or breach of the standard of care, however you want to couch it, on the part of VA. And it's filed in exactly the same way that you did for an increased rating claim. You go through your representative, you file the claim with VA.
Do you have a guy in Waterford?
Yep, and the way that it works is VA will then compensate you for any residuals that are the result of their negligence. So again, because you're already service-connected for your feet, I think the easiest route would probably be simply to have them look into an increased rating, and make sure they're taking into account all of your symptoms, even if it requires them to perhaps rate you under a different diagnostic code that maybe better fits your situation. And then the other option, like I said, would be the claim under what's called the 1151 claim. But that, again, has to show negligence, and that's kind of hard to prove, that the surgery was negligent, because oftentimes they're just unintended consequences. They're kind of common complications that occur. So that is a little bit harder to meet, but that's a different option. Like I said, without knowing precisely what you're rated for or what surgery you underwent, those would probably be my two suggestions.
I understand. One of the issues, too, I should let you know, is that this particular surgery was authorized by the VA to use an outside doctor. I guess due to the circumstances is that the surgeries couldn't take, they wouldn't be able to do it in the VA for over 3 months or more. And I think that there's a new ruling now that if you don't get a certain attention within 30 days, you're authorized by the VA to have an outside doctor do it. So they did authorize it. And the doctor performed the surgery, and basically what they had to try to do is straighten the large toe, and that's they had to put the metal plate in, but I don't know, maybe a month after the surgery was over, he took a look at it, and I mean, I could tell from the beginning that the toe was more crooked than it was when they did the surgery. So the other thing is that when I applied for the appeal, the VA wanted any information from the doctor, and they also get the records from the doctor after the during the surgery and after the surgery. I'm not really sure what that doctor provided them, but I just am really surprised that. And then the VA doctor, the appeals doctor, actually even took a look at my foot. But, you know, obviously they're not going to make any comments to or for or for against.
Right. Did we just lose Steve?
Nope.
Okay. Steve, we've got there are two things that we want to offer you the option for. Number one is that you can call Christina at Legal Help for Veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Christina, would you give him your number?
Sure. It's 1-800-693-4800.
693-4800.
That's correct.
Okay, and there's a couple of numbers that Michael has for the county service officers in Oakland County. You may have the. Do you have those?
I do. I have the phone number for Oakland County Veterans Services.
Okay.
Did one of the county veterans service officers help you in the beginning, either out of the Pontiac or Troy office?
The Pontiac one did. They helped me, and they basically sort of just guided me in how to fill out the forms for the appeal, and that was basically it.
Okay.
Well, hopefully we helped out, and if you want to give Christina or Michael or the service officer in Oakland County a call, let us know how it turns out.
I sure will. I really appreciate your talking to me.
One thing I think Christina is right here on the claim for what we call an 1151 claim. If you presented to the VA for medical treatment and they messed something up or they caused a different disability that's going to remain a chronic disability or a chronic problem, that's the thing that you would claim under 1151. And I'm wondering if you have a doctor that can verify that something went awry with that surgery and identify what the new problems are with your foot.
Real quick, could I get Christina's phone number again? 1-800?
Of course, it's 1-800-693-4800.
I've got it written down. Thank you very much, Christina. I appreciate it.
Of course. You're more than welcome.
And thank you for the people on WHAM for talking to me.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Veterans Radio. This is what we try to do once a month. The last Sunday of every month, we are talking to you about disability claims, disability problems. We got about 8 minutes to go, it looks like. If you want to give us a call, that number is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. I got two questions for both of you. Number one is, I'll do the easy one first. the veteran's choice, which is what Steve was talking about, is that if you, and I'll ask Michael if you would explain to our audience what a veteran's choice is. The concern is it's running out of money again.
Well, Congress did authorize more money, I believe it was August of last year, to give it basically new life. The VA also revamped the rules so that they're calling it Choice 2. It's a little bit more ramped up, if you allow me to use that acronym, than the former program, in that, again, if a veteran is outside of a 40-mile radius from a VA medical facility and the VA is going to be unable to schedule that person for treatment within 30 days, that's the 40-30 rule, then they will be given the choice of getting their health care out on the economy at VA expense. The other issue is if the VA does not provide that specific type of treatment, meaning they just don't have the expertise, then I believe regardless of radius or where you live, the VA will find a local provider to get the veteran the treatment that he or she needs, and then again at VA expense.
Okay, so the VA then negotiates the price with the outside physician or hospital or whatever.
They basically have a vetted list of providers right now that they use, and they typically turn to for those types of care that they don't provide.
Because I know here in Ann Arbor, in fact, my partner had brain surgery, and they did it at U of M because they weren't capable of doing it at the VA hospital.
I have a veteran right now on my caseload who is getting her neurosurgery done at the University of Michigan as well because the VA neurosurgery department, I believe, is dealing with some staffing issues, and they're just some capability issues where they refer those patients over to the University of Michigan.
Okay. I think the other question is, We still don't have a VA director. And the, many of the service organizations are all up in arms about this, of course. And I just wanted to know what your opinion is. Is it important to, you know, the question is, should they have somebody that, that is a doctor that has, you know, experience running a, you know, a large medical center? Or does it have to be, should it be a veteran? I mean, we haven't had much success. We've had seven directors in the last, what, 10 years? And nobody seemed to have been able to solve the problem. I've got it written down here somewhere when I find it. But that's my question. We've got 4 minutes to go. So let's solve the world's problems in 4 minutes. So what are we looking for? What would you, Christina, what do you think people are looking for? I have a survey here from the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America, and they just want somebody that's going to actually follow through. And they, the vast majority of people do not want the VA privatized. So that's the main thing, and so I'll let you go first, Christina.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd like somebody competent in there. That would be really nice. I think whoever goes in there, they're going to be in a hard position. It needs to be somebody who's experienced in dealing with, like you had said, a large system. But also be aware of the fact that the VA isn't just healthcare; it's also the benefits arm. And so they need to realize that, that, you know, they're going to be implementing laws and hopefully helping this new way of processing claims go through. There's a lot of changes that go on with that. I think, unfortunately, whoever goes in there, they're going to be time limited again. I think that's the problem that you run into an awful lot, because you've basically got, what, 2.5 years left now under this administration. If they continue on, that's great. But if they don't, then you've only got somebody who's potentially in there for 2.5 years. And that's kind of hard to make constructive change in that short of a period of time, at least when you're talking in Washington standards, you know, where I think their two speeds are basically slow and stop over there. So
it seems that way. Two questions that they asked. We've got about 2 minutes here. The two questions that the Iraq-Afghanistan veterans asked were, what is the most important qualities in a VA secretary? Number one, they said, was healthcare experience. Number two was military experience. And the big number three, not far behind, was bureaucratic management experience. Big deal, right? No surprise there. The other thing that they thought was very important was to reform the VA to support today's veterans, yes. Suicide prevention and more mental health capabilities. And to defend their military and veteran education benefits. I think those are all very important issues, and it's something that we need. Maybe we can put together a program later in the month or in the next couple of months if they don't come up with a VA director by then, because right now there are a number of organizations that are suing the promotion of the undersecretary because they didn't feel that was appropriate. So I think it's going to be very interesting. All right, we got about a minute and a half to go. Michael, I'll ask you for your last comments.
Well, I'll just chime in on one issue. Many of the modernization things that we've seen happen in the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs came under the helm of Honorable Shinseki when he was the Secretary of the Department of Veteran Affairs from 2009 to 2014. And he was a retired general from the U.S. Army, Hua.
All right. Well, unfortunately, that didn't work out the way he planned. I know that. Christina, last word.
No, I'm hoping for the best, really, at this point. It's, you know, it's the second largest cabinet, and I think they really need somebody in place who's going to be able to do a good job, for our veterans. It's a very deserving population, and I think they really need somebody who can kind of cut through the red tape, like your survey alluded to, and make some substantive changes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Christina Darrow from Legal Help for Veterans, Michael Smith from the Washtenaw County Office of Veterans Services. This is your program, folks. We appreciate you listening and tuning in today. We'll be back next week, and until then, you are dismissed.